the On the Mic podcast. This is your host, Tim Drake. Today's episode is our live episode from San Diego Comic-Con. This episode was so much fun to be able to tape. We had Rob Kuttner, who is a writer currently for Conan on TBS, as well as a former writer of The Daily Show. He also wrote on The Tonight Show with Conan O'Brien, as well as David J. Peterson, who is the creator of language on Game of Thrones, Thor, The 100, Penny Dreadful, and most recently Emerald City. So it was a lot of fun being able to sit down and talk with these guys. San Diego Comic-Con was such an amazing time. We aren't going to do much of a recap on this episode by any means because, you know, this is just simply the live episode. Next week, Austin and I will have a full recap of everything San Diego Comic-Con for you. We wanted to make sure we got this episode out right away. Thank you for the few people that did come out. It was cool to be able to, you know, it's a small crowd at San Diego Comic-Con for some of the podcasts. They're putting the library that's about a mile away from the convention center. It's still part of the program panels, but, you know, it's a little bit hard to get everybody away from the convention floor and the panels going on over there. But we're thankful for those that did come out. It was cool to be able to, you know, talk to a couple people afterwards that really enjoyed the show. It's always fun to meet new people that are becoming fans of the show. So thank you for those that came out. Thank you to Rob Kuttner for taking his time away from Conan. Conan was easily the hottest show at Comic-Con this year. We were lucky enough to be able to attend two dates with the cast of Game of Thrones, as well as the cast of Suicide Squad. Both were absolutely incredible, and Austin and I will talk about those shows more during the recap. But the day that Rob was there, they were taping just a couple hours after we did this live show. So Rob had to leave about 25 minutes into it. So we talked to Rob first and then brought David onto the stage. It was so cool learning both of their stories and about their projects. Make sure to go follow all of the links that we'll have on the website for both Rob and David. Check out their books. They have a lot of really awesome books. Especially Rob has his comic book, Shrinkage, that we talked to him about. Make sure you listen to his mini-series on HAL. It's called Runaway Brains. It stars Kent Jennings and Weird Al Yankovic. It is such an awesome series. I've absolutely loved listening to it. I know you will as well. So download the HAL app and check that out. Again, thank you so much to Rob Kuttner and David Peterson for being able to take the time out of your insanely busy Comic-Con schedules to come in and join us for this live episode. Hope you guys really enjoy this episode. This Saturday, if you guys are in Salt Lake City, I am moderating a panel for the Harry Potter book release down at Sam Weller Books at Trolley Square. It starts at 9 p.m. because it's a midnight release party. So I'm really excited for that. So if you're in Salt Lake City, make sure you come out to that. And yeah, we've got a lot of great events that we'll be talking about in the next episode when we recap San Diego Comic-Con. But here's the live episode with Rob Kuttner, David Peterson. Enjoy this episode.
It's another packed house this year, Austin.
Oh, man.
It's a... yeah. So the door's locked this year, so we don't even get like the bathroom crowd this year.
Yeah.
Because the bathroom crowd's like the drunk crowd at a bar.
They're the wild ones. You gotta watch out. They come steal your panel.
they were fun.
Literally,
last
maybe
year.
Who knows?
So, but for the handful of you that are here, thank you for fulfilling your obligation as members of SDCC and having to sit through this. We appreciate it. So it's been fun to come back this year. It was a rough start yesterday.
It was a great start.
Yeah, it was. We'll be optimistic. It was a great start. Just getting to the airport.
It's about the journey.
Yeah, just getting to the airport.
Literally in this case.
I don't always worry about my gas level in my car. So
he does.
And I figured I've got gas to get to the airport. I can fill up on the way home. Literally on the ramp into the parking garage at the airport, our car decided to die.
We weren't on the ramp yet. We were right before it. All right, Tim, here we go. Hop out.
We pushed it about another 10 yards, and we're like, yeah, we're too weak for this. So the car died, and then we had to call the airport to come put a little bit of gas in. And that's where it got interesting, that the guy that came to fill up the gas.
He had a very interesting characteristic.
He had the most gnarly booger. It was protruding at least half an inch from his nose, and he walked right up to me first and just stared at me, and I was just like, oh my gosh, should I tell him? Which I didn't, because I didn't know how you address that with another adult.
I was close. I contemplated. I was like...
And Austin kind of walked around the other side, and Austin's eyes just got really big, like, oh my gosh, look at that thing. Okay. And then he just walked around and got in the car, so he didn't tell him either. But it was It was pretty nice.
He's a good guy though.
Yeah, he was super nice. He got us on our way. But that was not the first thing you want to see at 8 o'clock in the morning is a nice massive booger. So and then even once we got here, we weren't allowed to check into our hotel on time. So we had 3 o'clock check-in.
I forgot about the airport. I was going through security, and they're like,
and Austin brings a knife with him.
I almost tried to sneak a knife. I didn't know.
Because Austin, for some reason, has never flown.
I took my Camelback, like, last second, and had a pocket knife in it. And so I was like, oh, yeah, about that. No matter what you say at this point, it just seems like a lie, like a...
The TSA lady, though, had a great gotcha moment. Yeah. She asks Austin, do you have anything in your bag? And he's just like, oh, I've got some lotion. She's like, not any sharp objects? He's like, no. She's like, what about this? And it was just like, she was just giving this magic trick of, ha-ha, I got you, look at this. And
yeah. So I mailed it back home.
It made Austin feel like an idiot, and then he had to go and buy an envelope and mail the knife home. So that was
and then we
get here and we called our hotel just to see if they offered early check-in, and the lady at the front desk was like, not only do we not offer early check-in, but you can't check in at 3 p.m. I was like, well, that's what time I'm reserved for. What time can I check in? She's like, after 3 p.m. I was like, so 3:01? What are we looking at here? She's like, no, like 3:34. And I was like, but I have a reservation for 3. She's like, yes, you can't check. And all that was going through my head is that entire Seinfeld episode where they can't hold Jerry's reservation. And I wanted to get into it with the lady, but it was going to go nowhere.
Yeah.
So, but it's been fun coming back here. We went to the Mr. Robot world premiere, their virtual reality thing today.
It is virtual reality. I wouldn't know because it didn't work
for
me.
Yeah, Austin's wouldn't download. So my wife's downloaded all the way. She was kind of like, haha, I'm the only one that's going to get to watch this. And then when it started, it told her she had already watched it. So she didn't get to watch it. And then mine, so they gave us these VR boxes. I know Conan's doing a similar type of the Conan 360. But we were sitting out in Petco Park, and these are like magnifying lenses.
Oh, yeah. So I'm sitting there, I look over at Tim.
I could smell something burning, nothing really caught on to me. I was kind of looking around, and finally Austin leans over after 5 minutes. He's like, your thing's on fire.
Tim, your box is literally
my box
smoking
was starting right now. Starting on fire.
There's a joint in your box, or...
No, they weren't that good of a box. So.
It wasn't a gift box. It was, okay.
So, but since we were here last year, there's been a lot of changes for both of us in the last year. Austin,
some good things have happened.
This year alone has worked on a film with Jeremy Renner and Elizabeth Olsen.
And John Bernthal. I didn't get to meet him, though.
And then a second film with Josh Hartnett.
Yeah, Josh Hartnett.
So I don't do much acting, but when I do, it's also...
But when I do.
I took a featured role in an upcoming HBO show, and all of a sudden I come walking onto set, and there's Paul Reubens standing right in front of me, and I had to be professional and not cry that I was meeting Pee Wee Herman. And so that was, it was amazing to,
you cried, don't
I
lie.
I did, but that was at lunch in the corner. And that was nothing new from any other day.
I just imagine you ranging between emotions.
And it was funny laughing. Because Sharon Stone was also in this film, and it was being directed by Steven Soderbergh, and Garrett Hedley was in it. And everybody's freaking out about that. And I'm like, what was it?
Hedlund. Said Hedley. Yeah.
I make up last names. But it was, everybody was freaking out about that. I'm like, but that's Pee-wee. People were like, yeah, so what? That's Sharon Stone. And I'm like, but Pee-wee. that made my entire day that day.
That was a good day for you. You hit me up a lot, and you're like, Sharon Stone. Yeah, it was like Pee-wee Herman. It was like all caps.
So, and it sucked because it was such a tight, closed set that I really didn't even get to. It was just I couldn't work with you, Mr. Reubens. And as he's walking away, I'm just like, it was sad. I didn't get to say much more than that.
It happens. You'll come across again.
So, and then I also, this year, I started writing for the satire site Robot Butt, if you've heard of them. So they're a fun site. I just had a piece that was published today about Pokemon Go. That's called Man Drives Car Off Cliff While Playing Pokemon Go, Keeps Playing After Death. So that one's circulating today.
But you wrote that before someone.
Yeah, I wrote that before. I guess just down the street here, two guys fell off a cliff. They didn't die though, but
drove
they fell off.
Not like, fell off.
No, these guys actually fell off.
They fell off.
Even worse, they walked off the cliff while playing Pokemon Go. So they didn't die, though. But you know, the editor writes to me last week and he's like, hey, this piece is going up. By the way, did you know two people actually did fall off a cliff? And I was just like, yeah, oh well. I wrote this first. Like, they're copying me at this point.
Yeah, that was plagiarism at its finest.
Melania Trump called and was just like, hey, I've got the story. You guys can copy this one. So, we've had some fun with that. So I also had I got into it with a right-wing blogger the other day after a piece I had published a couple weeks ago that was called The Five Water Slides You Must Ride at the Republican National Convention. So, and he quoted it, and I love that people on Twitter, for some reason, they don't understand if you quote a tweet, the person that tweeted it still sees what you write. And they had quoted it, and he, since we can't use the language here, another F-tard liberal thinking that he's funny. And I wrote him back, and he just said, well, thank you for thinking I'm funny. So, and then he reported me for harassment and blocked me, which was just like a double victory. I loved that.
So, I understand you're writing a book as well.
Yes. So, oddly enough, 3 years ago today, a book I collaborated on, when I thought I knew how to write satire, but I didn't, that came out 3 years ago today. So my old writing partner sent me a text today and told me that, and I was like, cool, we sold 6 copies. It's not anything to remember, but he's commemorating it. But yeah, I have a new book after a bunch of stuff I've worked on with Second City that'll be coming out in November. That some of those pieces from Robot Butt, and then some of the others that I've been writing. One that I can't wait for my grandma to read. It's good. My grandma. I mean, we always hear about how, you know, people as they get older become more racist. My grandma. It's like a whole nother level.
It wasn't
level.
An age thing.
It's not an age thing. When she invites us to a barbecue, we have to make sure the address isn't Auschwitz. Like, it's that bad. It's really getting bad. And so the chapter is called The Eulogy for My Racist Grandmother, so which she still is alive. But I'm just trying to, you know, prep for it. But
prep it, yeah.
So, but yeah, that's kind of what's been going on with us for the last little bit. So we may as well introduce our first guest.
Perfect timing. The
perfect
name
timing.
Tags.
Look at that.
Bam.
So our first guest. Which one do you got there? Perfect. So our first guest. You've seen his work on Conan on TBS, as well as The Tonight Show with Conan O'Brien, as well as The Daily Show, and he also has a new miniseries on HAL, as well as a digital comic that we're going to talk to him about. So. Everybody, this massive crowd, please give it up for Rob Kuttner.
Woo! Probably shouldn't clap in the mic. I'm like, yeah, peeking.
It's like the audible version of a virtual reality experience, just right in there, so they can hear it like it's full screen.
Oh yeah, we're shooting this in the 3D, so you can look around and everything.
And smell-o-vision too.
So, well, welcome, Rob.
Hi.
So
nice to be here.
We're really excited to have you here. When you reached out to us, I was just like, I know that name. So right away, I had to make sure that it was really you.
See, you had a PI follow me for a week.
Yeah. So, now, I mean, you guys have quite the week going on right now with everything with Conan. I saw people were waiting in the standby line for today's show at like 5 in the morning.
That's what I heard, yeah. And they're all cosplaying as Conan and Andy, like every single week.
Really?
Yeah, every single, yeah.
So it's got to be fun though to walk past that and realize that you guys have one of the biggest shows that is happening.
Yeah, it's cool because everyone like all the local businesses are like, oh cool, you guys are back, and they say stuff like that and don't give us any no discount or anything. You're just like,
you guys are back.
Right. Yeah, you and the roaches.
What is it like prepping for a show of such magnitude?
Well, it's actually. A lot of the produced pieces that you—I don't know if you saw the Conan versus Andy thing they did last night.
We haven't had a chance to watch.
Oh yeah, so check it out on Team Coco. Every night they've been doing like a lot of like video pieces that like took a lot of work. So there's a whole epic showdown of Conan v Andy, like Batman v Superman, where they just have a huge like dramatic showdown for no reason whatsoever. a lot of those were actually shot over the past few weeks. So people have been scrambling to put those together while doing the regular show. And then I work for the monologue department, so we've been writing like just a bunch of Comic-Con themed jokes ever since we got here.
So how many jokes do you guys typically write a day? So I know when I started going through the late night courses with Second City, they were like, mm-hmm. oh yeah, they write like 20 to 30 a day. And then I got to the next stage and they were like, no, it's more like 100 to 200.
Well, they're both wrong. In my case, I would say I do between 35 and 50 a day, depending on the day. And we do a monologue of about 10, and there's four of us on the team. So you do the math on that, which I can't because I can't do math. But if I could, I would surely conclude that you basically like generate hundreds of jokes a day. And of those, you sort of will find 10 or so that you think are, you know, either just good or or like, you know, sort of relevant to the mood of the crowd, or, you know, it's still in the news enough to interest people. So it's a very, you have to like throw a lot of stuff at the wall to get one good piece of spaghetti to stick.
So now, did you come over, because I know you were with The Daily Show, and then from there kind of joined on with The Tonight Show. Did you come over with Conan from New York
when that whole move happened? No, so I left The Daily Show, and I thought I'd go to The Tonight Show because that seemed like the most solid franchise in all of TV. Like, if you're going to move your family across the country, you better pick a train that's going in a solid direction. So I showed up, I destroyed that show as per the plan from within.
Only took, 9 months?
That's right. Yeah. That's right. And then somehow got him back on to the TBS one.
So what was the experience like on The Daily Show with working with Jon Stewart?
It was a cool place, and especially when I was there, which is like the Bush administration, which was just sort of God's gift to satire.
they just wrote half of your stuff for you.
It just came free-form, like the characters, right? You know, you couldn't have beat those characters. And so that was a great time. It did get to be a bit much after a while. I was there for 6.5 years, and you can only watch so much Fox News without, like, you know, losing your moral compass. just feeling like eating a whole sack of donuts every day because your stomach just feels that bad from it. Or maybe your stomach feels good from that. You know, it depends on the person. But I got sort of tired of doing that after a while because it was just very intense, and I wanted to just sort of switch gears and do something a little smarter but sillier. And so I reached out to people at Conan that I knew. And I had met during the writer's strike when we were all like in the picket lines together. So I sort of knew them a little bit and started indicating interest in moving with them to The Tonight Show. And then I got the job like 1 month before it started and moved out.
So 1 week before it started, I mean, did you have a family and stuff then, or was it just kind of like, all right,
it was like the Beverly Hillbillies. Like, we packed up like the rocking chair on top of the truck, granny on that, you know, we just like, we're getting out.
We got to get some speed. There's a hill coming.
That's right.
I love that you bring up the rocking chair, because that's the only line I ever remember is when they just, watch your head, granny, and she just smacks her head as they go. Right, I think that was on the remake of the Beverly Hillbillies, but that was my first
thing.
Introduction.
That was a safety lawsuit because there was a rocking chair accident. So their lawyers make them mention the rocking chair. Could cause head injuries.
So now with the new projects that you have with Shrinkage, mm-hmm. as well as the miniseries, I assume those are fairly time consuming, writing everything and then the production of those. With everything that you have with Conan, are they fairly supportive with all the other outside projects that you work on?
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of people from there going to do other stuff. But also, I have a very sort of predictable schedule where I have a bunch of deadlines to turn in jokes every day, and it's a bunch of sort of pre-scheduled meetings. So, you know, if I can sort of work strategically, I can figure out pockets of time. This is like my new Neil deGrasse Tyson special, pockets of time. I can find pockets of time in which to just sort of devote a little work to that stuff. And, you know, like, so I sort of, each one takes a certain amount of time, like over a couple months. Like, if I was doing comics full time or making audio series, that's like all I'd be doing, and I could do it in a couple of weeks. This takes like, you know, 6 weeks or a few months to put it all together. But it's, you know, if you find the time, you can put the pieces together on your own schedule.
Mm-hmm. So now, how did the miniseries come about? I binged right through it. It is so incredible.
Oh, thanks.
So, and Ken Jennings and Weird Al, I think, I never would have put those two together. So, and they are so masterful together that I want to see this as an animated series.
it could be. I've thought of that before, too. So, yeah, actually what you just said sort of put your fingers on it. So I'm, like, really interested in artificial intelligence, and I think it's sort of come about, there's been sort of a paradigm shift in artificial intelligence where it used to be sort of like that, you know, does not compute syntax error robots.
Yeah.
That just sort of run around until they like start smoking and explode. like the old, you know, the old Star Trek version of the computer. Yeah. So like now there's the sort of intuitive artificial learning computers that are sort of trying to be human, and they're kind of like, to me, they always struck me as sort of like kind of needy kids. Like, what would you like to do now? You know, tell me more about this. They have that kind of like nerdy need to learn. So I just thought it'd be kind of funny to see that sort of as a character. And then I was interested in the whole Ken Jennings Watson saga on Jeopardy. And I thought, Ken, and so Ken Jennings, I follow on Twitter. I don't know if you follow him.
Yeah, I do.
He's very funny.
He's really funny.
He's like, and he's very sharp and irreverent and very surprising. I always thought he's kind of a funny guy. And I thought, so one day I thought, what about kind of a buddy comedy story with like the two of them stuck together somehow, like Watson, a little bit more larger than life Watson. And then who you get who's like the most un-Ken Jennings guy you can think of, his name has to have weird in it. So,
yeah.
So Weird Al. And I think he wanted to do something that wasn't musical because he's been doing more acting and stuff. So I knew him a little bit from Twitter as well, and I reached out to Al, and I was miraculously able to find the space in his very, very busy schedule. His manager was like, okay, do this by, get this together in January and we'll talk. And I was like, okay, so like, I spent my whole Christmas break at home with my family, like at night, like writing the scripts and all that stuff, which just probably has that feel of written in a dark attic at night after the kids have gone to bed. That explains that. So I spent all that time putting it all together, and then I went back to him and they were on board. And then from the, once I had those two, I was able to reach out to a couple other people that had some kind of tenuous showbiz connection to and say, look, and because it's audio, you can just find a time that people can show up and record it,
right,
which is much easier to get people to agree to do that. And also like with actresses, like they don't have to like do hair and makeup and they're like, there's, no, there's going to be no photographs, right? And I'm like, yes, like, okay.
Yeah, and so. you have a lot of great voice actors on there. Some of them even former guests of the show, Dave Koechner and Seth Herzog have both been on the podcast.
Yeah.
But then, I mean, you've also had Mike Lane Black on there, Phil Hendry. Mm-hmm. So I absolutely loved when I saw that he was voicing some on the episodes. I was excited for those. Lauren Lapkus. I know there's some more reoccurring that I'm forgetting. So those are ones that stuck out to me right away.
Mayim Bialik.
Oh, that's right.
Big Bang and Adam Pally. I think the other ones. I think it was all like, this is a thing where like they didn't put me on a schedule and they just said like, you know, take what you need, time you need it. Because that I was able to like reach out to people and like find, sometimes it takes a while and find like, well, Seth and I have done shows together and I've been trying to get to Koechner for a couple of years, but he's always too busy. So again, it was like one of these things where like it's so easy to schedule. Sometimes you can find people to work. So I just like waited until like it sort of assembled my Ocean's 11, not my Ocean's 13. Though, let me be clear about that. Once I sort of had the team kind of in place, then I could just start putting the episodes together whenever I could find pockets of time. time.
So now, how did you get the connection with Hal? So because I know Hal, they, at least to me, they feel like they're a newer app still. I was only familiar with them really because of WTF.
Right, right.
Because I know all the back episodes were on.
So they're mostly known for being like kind of the Netflix, like the aggregator of comedy podcasts. So they have like the whole WTF and Scarborough Country and like they have like, and they have all these albums and stuff. So they're mostly like, they were like Netflix where they were known for content and they wanted to start doing more original stuff. And they announced they were doing something with Jemaine Clement from Flight of the Conchords, like a scripted show. And I'd had this idea for like a scripted podcast show and I sort of tried pitching it around to various places and no one was really interested in it. And I saw they were doing that and they were kind of new. And so I just wrote an email to them and I was like, okay, great. Well, they're not interested either. It was literally like 6 months later or something like that. They wrote back and said, oh, sorry, didn't see your email. And I was like, oh, whoops, we goofed.
Even find it at that point. It's like all the way down at the bottom of the...
They were just clearing out their inbox. Oh, I got all these.
Browsing. They were answering boner enlargement ads ahead of responding to my email. That's the pecking order.
Sorry, you got lost in all the...
Yeah, there's some really good offers for Nigerian princes. I just were given up on the idea, and they wrote back to me, and then I described it in more detail, because I'd sort of put together a pitch for it, and they were like, oh, that sounds great. And then they were just, let me do my thing.
Now, with Shrinkage, it's a digital comic book, so that it's the President of the United States' brain gets taken over by aliens.
By aliens, yes.
So tell me a little bit how Shrinkage came about.
Isn't that obvious how that story, that's sort of like the story that's always told?
And it's very relatable.
Where did you find motivation for these?
Yeah, right, ripped from the headlines. In that case, I'm really fascinated with the brain, and I would read a lot about brain science. I'm just really interested about anything about it, and I just was thinking like it would be a great sort of, we know so little about it. We know a lot about like what comes out of it, but not about how any of it works or even works together. But we have some like really hazy ideas. And so I thought, what a great sort of playground that would be to have something like a crazy story that would be a comic book story. I was thinking specifically like to have the kind of like out there visuals and like lush colors. And
yeah,
like it just felt like there was something that would be like if you proposed it as a movie, it would be like outlandishly expensive. And as a podcast, it would be kind of a waste of time. So I thought it's a comic book idea, and So then I started imagining, like, why would you have a whole story take place in it? And then I was thinking about movies like Fantastic Voyage, where scientists get shrunk down, but I didn't just want to do that. And then I thought, what if there's actually, like, a war going on in the president's, in someone's brain, and they're having to, like, you know, make a normal go of it. And then I just raised the stakes as high as I could think of. I made it the president of the United States, and I made it aliens that were, that feed on radiation and want to use the president of the United States to, like, launch World War III so they can just feast all day long. So the idea is the president gets invaded by these, like, nanoscale tiny aliens who start trying to sort of puppeteer him using his brain, and we have to use experimental technology on the human side to send a general and a scientist in to, like, fight them, and they don't really know much more what they're doing either. But so they're having this whole, like, tiny, like, cosmic galactic war at a tiny scale, and then the president's trying to do his job, and
yeah,
everything else is sort of coming apart around him.
So now I know we have to let you get back over to Conan because you guys have a show taping, what, like 2 hours here, if even so. So as before we let you go, where can everybody be able to find the comics and follow you on social media and online?
I have gone dark. No, that's why I'm on a podcast. I have gone gray. So you can find the podcast. It's called Runaway Brains, and it's on the howl.fm network, where, as I said, they have all these other comedy stuff. If you just search in there for it, you'll see it's called Runaway Brains. And the comic is called Shrinkage, and it's on the Farrago Comics app. That's Farrago. That's sort of a free comics reading app. And it's one of their featured series. It's called Shrinkage. And then I'm on Twitter at Apocalypse How. I also have a funny book about the apocalypse called Apocalypse How. It's the only feel-good guide to the end of the world about why it's going to be so much better, sort of a motivational book. So if you go to at Apocalypse How, you can, it leads you to my website and tells you what I'm up to lately, and you can also follow my daily quips and quabs, aka Conan's Rejects.
So, but they are funny. So I've enjoyed following you on there.
Oh,
so there's
I get a
good laugh. So I appreciate you taking the time out of your insanely busy schedule here. So I know we will actually be at Conan tomorrow and on Saturday.
Oh, great! Yeah.
So yeah, we scored tickets twice.
Nice. They have so much stuff lined up for those shows that, like, they're not going to even be able to use it all. Like, they just jam pack all the stuff they've been spent the past month working on. So. You're going to love it.
They can always be the scrap episodes.
That's right. It could be a scrap
episode. Those are more addicting than I'd like to admit.
Those are those are like a window into a vision of madness, I think.
So, well, thank you so much, Rob. And we'll let you get back up to the theater.
Great to be here, and enjoy the rest of your con.
Yeah, you as well. Thank you.
We're shaking hands right now.
It's always great for an audible show. So while Rob heads out, give him a round of applause real quick before he leaves too. So, and as Rob heads out, we'll introduce our next guest here. I'm really excited to have our next guest. Rob actually sent me an email late a few nights ago and asked if I'd be interested to have our next guest. And as soon as he didn't even tell me his name. He just said, "Would you be interested in having the guy that created the language for Game of Thrones?" And I responded right away, and I was like, "Are you talking about David Peterson?" And he just wrote back, and she's like, yeah. And so I was really excited because I just saw David on The Daily Show a few months ago, and I was astounded during that interview. So, and I'm not going to try and talk to him in Dothraki like Trevor felt out. But with that, everybody, please welcome David Peterson. You know, it's funny, when I announced that David was coming on the show on our Facebook at first, my dyslexia got to me, and I wrote Davidson.
Yeah.
And I had several people that are just like, is he going to be sober enough to even talk to you guys? And I was like, he doesn't come across like a stoner. What do you talk? And then it took me like a day to realize, I wrote Pete Davidson instead of...
my favorite emails are the one that begins, "Hi, Peter. You'd be surprised.
We love you on SNL." No.
Actually, though, no. My favorite story about meeting somebody with Game of Thrones. I was waiting to give a talk at University of Colorado Boulder, and a friend of mine was there, so he saw it, so he can verify that this actually happened. And the assistant there at the linguistics department gave us an office where we could wait because it was like, you know, 30 minutes till I was going to present. And right, and she was about to leave, but then she comes back, bethinks herself, and looks at me and says, "You know, I don't like that Game of Thrones." I said, "Oh well, I know it's pretty violent." So I was like, "Oh no, I don't mind that. I just don't like that Game of Thrones." And she was looking at me, waiting for my response. And so I say, "Well, thanks for letting me know." And then she looks at me and does this, and then walks away. I know this is a video podcast, right? So everybody can see that.
Our viewers can see.
Yeah, but no, it was definitely that look. It's like, well, I tried with this idiot. Don't even know why I did.
I'm pretty sure my mom's called a Game of Thrones once or twice. It's different every time.
My mom calls it. Wait, what is that? that's what my mom refers to.
Oh, well, yeah. That's all right.
Yeah, I had actually had to explain to Austin the finale, and I was over at my parents' house while my car was getting worked on, and
oh, really?
I had to call and explain to Austin part of the finale this year to Game of Thrones, and my mom the entire time is just giving me the strangest looks as I'm just like, no, so John was a bastard, but not really Ned's, and she's just staring at me like, what is happening on the couch right now?
Yeah, if you didn't have any background in any of that, you would be what?
Man, you just got to compare it to Dallas, then she'll get it.
That would probably still go way over her head. So you got to remember, we're in Utah. So my family comes from that very, very conservative group out there. And if it wasn't Donnie and Marie or possibly something on PBS, it wasn't much. They've missed quite a bit.
Wow. Well, my condolences. But
yeah, it was an odd childhood.
Thank you.
So, but a little bit about David for those of you that don't know. David is a master of languages. So he's created Dothraki on Game of Thrones. I'm not even going to attempt the other names of the languages because I will butcher them. But languages on
just try, just give it
on Thor, the 100, mm-hmm. Defiance, Penny Dreadful. Yeah. I feel like I'm leaving out another one there.
Several, like Dominion, the ever-popular Starcross that was on CW for one season, Warcraft recently, Emerald City coming out later.
Yeah, I saw you just posted that on Twitter.
There you go, I tweeted it.
Yeah.
It's official.
Yeah. Actually, probably others, but I forget. Yeah, I think that's most of it. Yeah.
So now, how did this all come about? So I know it started with Game of Thrones, correct?
Yeah. So my very first job was Game of Thrones, and the way that I came to it was the producers, David Benioff and Dan Weiss, actually reached out to somebody who put them in contact with the Language Creation Society, which is a nonprofit for language creators. And the president of the Language Creation Society, Cy, put together a competition for those who might be interested in creating the language for the show, and then announced it to the language creation communities online, and then anybody who wanted to could apply and compete. Many people did not take it seriously, partly because, due to the NDAs, they weren't allowed to announce that it was Game of Thrones, that it was a book adaptation of George R. R. Martin's series, anybody who was involved with it, or that it was on HBO. So the announcement was like, compete to create a language for a television show. And I think most conlangers thought, well, all right.
I heard that before.
Right? It was just all rehashes of Klingon as many times as possible. Right?
Yeah. Anyway, so it was like a 2.5 month competition, or maybe like a month and a half long competition. It was one of those two, maybe somewhere in between. But after two rounds, I emerged as the victor, and so I was able to create the language for the internal pilot, because that was what the job was for, to create the language for the internal pilot that HBO got to see and decide if the show was going to go to series or not. And then after that, it got picked up to series. I got to do the rest of the stuff for season one. And thus far, I've been brought back each season, so, including for season seven, but, fingers crossed for season eight, you never know.
Yeah. So now, do you work a lot then with the actors and the dialogue coaches to make sure that they are doing everything correctly?
To hear God, no. No, I mean, it's 90% of it is pretty good. Then every so often it just gets flubbed up, but it's progress. But no, not with Game of Thrones. I generally don't work with or even meet any of the actors until their characters are dead. like I met Jason Momoa for the first time at the premiere for season two. And of course, well, actually, you know what? He was on season two. Just, you know, his character wasn't alive. He was in a flashback. Yeah. Spoiler. But it was cool meeting him. And I've actually worked with him on a couple of other movies where he's needed to do an accent, and I've kind of acted as his dialect coach. But I never met him or worked with him during his tenure on the show. It's just the way it goes.
So now, what's the backstory with how you even came up with the language?
How much do you pull from real languages?
He did drink from it, sorry. Okay, so... With Dothraki, of course, the goal for those languages was to make them as faithful as possible to George R. R. Martin's original conception. That was the idea for the show, and so it held for the languages as well. So what I did was I started with the words that were in the books, because there were 54 or 56, I can't remember, words in there, and also names. Most of them were names. But so I started with them, because I had to make sure that the language that I created still made sense with the stuff that he had. It wouldn't be cool if my language sounded and looked totally different and his stuff in the book was no longer grammatical. So that was the biggest and most important constraint for that language. So I took whatever phrases there were, analyzed them, analyzed their sound structure to make sure that the sound structure that I created fit with it, and then analyzed all the phrases grammatically and then built the grammar on top of it. So the result is a language that it's definitely different from English, because George R. R. Martin did some cool non-English stuff there, but it's not as different or as daring as it could have been, because it was kind of constrained by what George R. R. Martin did. And what he created ended up, I mean, if you look at the way the language works, it's kind of something that you wouldn't, grammatical structures you wouldn't be surprised to find in like a European language or a Romance language specifically. Mm-hmm. So it kind of tends towards that. It's not as wild as some of the stuff I've gotten to do on other shows. I'm going to drink this water. I don't care if he opened it. Oh, he didn't. Oh, hear that.
Oh, it? It's still fresh. You got the pop of freshness.
Mm. Mm. Oh, yeah.
That sounds like that was like a terrible Subway campaign. The pop of freshness. So now... after you had kind of started doing everything with Game of Thrones, how did the other shows come about, and how did you make it so that each, I mean, with so many different shows now, so many different languages, how did you make sure that each language was still its own language and was able to differentiate?
Grammatically, it's not difficult, because grammatically I can do whatever I want, but the sound is actually, it's difficult each time, because I always seem to get the same... instruction from producers, which is, we want a language that sounds really, really exotic and different, and we want it to be really easy for the English-speaking actors to pronounce.
Yeah, great.
Okay. It's, I've always joked it's like Marge with the Chanel suit. It's a very specific reference for those who watch The Simpsons, but it's like every time it's like, all right, how do I make something new?
Make something new with the same set of sounds.
I mean, you can do stuff. So I think that if you hear enough, but like there's enough phonological variety there that they sound different enough. But at least grammatically, I get to do all sorts of wild and fun things. I'm creating a new one just now, and I'm going to do some really fun stuff with it. I'm going to do some head marking with it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is out of all of them that you've created so far, is there a favorite that you have?
Oh, yeah. The Arathian language that I created for Defiance is my favorite. That was also my favorite show to work on. Really sad. I think a lot of us really thought we were going to get a fourth kind of farewell season. But no, I think that they saw the season three finale and the sci-fi execs, and they thought, nah, that's pretty good. let's just call it a series. Oh, man. It was so much fun working on that show, though. But yeah, no, Arathian is definitely my favorite. I would like to use it again someday, but it's really hard to get people excited about a language that was created for a property that doesn't really exist anymore, and that not people no, or people don't really know much about.
So now with the new Thor movie that comes out, is it next year?
Ragnarok. Oh yeah, I don't remember from that slide at Comic-Con what year.
I've lost track of there's enough Marvel properties at this point that I'm just like, yeah. When I see the poster, I'll know. So they come out every other month, it seems like.
Yeah.
So, but did you work on the newest one as well?
I don't know. Like, honestly, I don't even know if that one's already started filming yet. But, you know, I created a language for the Dark Elves, and it seemed like they kind of served their purpose in the series, so I doubt if it will ever be needed again. I did work on another Marvel movie. It hasn't come out yet, and it's not Thor.
Are you allowed to say, or is the NDA still in place?
I think it is.
Ah.
For movies. I don't know. And you know, there's thousands of people here that'll be tweeting it, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. That's a good enough hint, I guess.
Yeah. Anyway, though. But hey, if the Thor guys are listening, come on, man. Let's get some Dark Elves in there, something. I have, there's like one really huge fan of that language who would just absolutely love it if the Dark Elf language were used again. I think it really is one fan, though.
just the one.
Yeah.
How often do you get fans who can speak it, like, fluently, or you could, like, have a conversation with?
Dothraki, I think there are a lot of people that are kind of, like, low-level proficient. Like, maybe they've taken, like, you know, 2 months of a high school course, and yeah. So they know some stuff. And so I can keep ahead of them pretty well.
They bought his language book. And they just start teaching themselves.
This is true. Oh, yeah, that's right. I have a book, Living Language Dothraki. You can learn it.
That was actually going to be my next question.
There you go. Yeah. And Valyrian, High Valyrian, there's a guy that's so good that he makes me question my own judgment about, like, you know, whether what I'm seeing is grammatically accurate because he's so good. He's pretty good. And then with Trigetaslang, which is the language for the 100, this is, and a lot of people don't know this, that is far and away my most popular language. Like, it leaves the Game of Thrones languages in the dust. It is so insanely popular. There were two fan sites, but the more recent fan site is the real good one. Fans use it all the time. They're very, very good with it.
So when you started kind of diving into all of this, including even going to college, and were you already a fan of some of the other previous languages through television? Like, were you a fan of Klingon and some of that, or was it just something that came about afterwards?
I actually didn't know that Klingon was a language until I started creating languages in college. Oh, wow. I also didn't know that Tolkien had created languages until then as well. In fact, when, you know, we were on the listserv that's still there, which is just, you know, an email-based listserv, when people started mentioning Tolkien, kind of like rolled my eyes. I'm like, you're talking about the guy, the Hobbit dude? You're using this guy as a model for a language creator because he created, you know, some funky names? And then it was later on that I realized, oh, no, actually, he's probably the best language creator of the 20th century. Okay, fine. Yeah. In fact, his language creation predated the books. That was partly what inspired him to write the books.
Because
he just loved creating languages. And he thought, kind of, if there was a world where these languages were spoken, even if it were fictional, it would kind of justify his creation. So that was why he did it. So yeah, so I came to it totally after creating languages. I just started in college because I thought it would be fun, and I kept up with it. Still, so far, I haven't gotten tired of it yet. It's been nice. 16 years now.
Wow.
Yeah.
So now, on top of that, we're just doing pitches for all of your books now.
Yes, pitches.
So earlier this year, you had The Art of the Language Invention come out. That was kind of the first introduction I saw of your work when you were on The Daily Show talking about this book. How did the idea for this book to be able to teach others, you know, how to do what you do, essentially?
Oh, man, this is something that basically I think all language creators wish that there was.
Yeah.
Like when we were starting out, there was no text for that. The only way to learn was just kind of from each other. You know,
trial and error.
Yeah, well, trial and error, and then also just talking to other language creators, looking at their languages. It was a really long process. And not only that, language creators were so isolated in the beginning that it's lots of people who create languages, especially created languages in the older days, thought that they were the first one ever to do it. They never met another language creator. And so as a result of that, when you start, you think that you're the best, which I also did. You know, I started creating languages. I thought I was the first person ever to do it. I thought I was the best at it. It turns out I was really just probably one of the worst when I started. And so it's just a huge steep learning curve. And so everybody is always saying, like, well, how do you start out? And usually the response was, well, join one of the message boards, start creating languages, slowly learn little by little, and maybe like 10 years from now, you'll be pretty okay. So this was kind of like just a jump start to that, to get people up to speed both on just kind of like elementary linguistics and also things that you have to take into consideration when you're creating a language, or at least a certain type of language. This one, it focuses on languages that are naturalistic, so languages like we find here on Earth, as opposed to really funky out there stuff, with the understanding that it's kind of like the way in painting you start out with still lifes, and then later on you get to abstract stuff once you've mastered the, you know, the elements of naturalism.
I'm still trying to get stick people down, so that's way beyond me.
Come on, man. You can't do XKCD until you've actually painted a real life, you know, portrait.
So, well, I know our time is getting close to wrapping up here. Where can everybody kind of find you on social media, so and pick up your books and learn about everything you do?
So I have a website, artoflanguageinvention.com. That's also the name of the book. So that'll get you everywhere. And I've got a YouTube series called The Art of Language Invention. Very poor production values. So if you're a big fan of that, and most of the videos are now recorded usually between 1 and 4 a.m. because that's the only time I have to myself with my 7-month-old daughter. It's the only time I can record. And then just on like Twitter and Tumblr, I have a screen name or username, Daedalus, D-E-D-A-L-V-S. And also, since we're doing pitches, one more pitch I wanted to mention. I am an executive producer on a documentary about language creators, people that create languages, whether they're famous or not. Other executive producers are actually some people that you may have heard of, Mark Okrand, who created Klingon, Paul Frommer, who created NotV for Avatar, Christine Schreyer, who created the Kryptonian language for Man of Steel, David Sallow, who worked on the Lord of the Rings movies with Tolkien's languages. And we have our crowdfunding going on right now. It's Indiegogo, and I think we're in the middle of week 2. So, nice. And you can actually get a copy of my book at a certain funding level. So if you want the book and also are interested in helping us out to finish the movie to make it look somewhere near professional, go and contribute. We interviewed Jason Momoa, because that guy is awesome. Dude, he's a horse. This guy's huge. He's really, really cool.
He seems like he'd be very intimidating with the pictures I've seen. I mean, even in Game of Thrones, you see him stand next to I just want to call her Khaleesi. I can't think of her name all of a sudden. But you see, no, the actress.
Amelia Clark.
Oh, all the actors.
Yeah.
But you see him stand next to her, and I mean, he's a beast.
Yeah. And man, in real life.
He's too manly to be Aquaman.
In real life, I have never seen him without a smile on his face. He's just a constant party. I love that dude.
So isn't he married to Sofia Vergara?
No. Are you kidding? He's married to Denise Huxtable.
Who's the one that's married to Sofia Vergara?
How is that not exciting to you?
Joe, they're both gigantic. I confused them. So anyway. While we've got just a couple minutes left, does anybody have any questions out of the massive crowd that we have here? Got to be one of you.
One thing I was wondering with the 100 language, mm-hmm. when the series started, wasn't it only set like 95 years in the future or something? I mean, the language developed so quickly and differently only over 3 or 4 generations like that? Or they kind of said, oh no, our bad is actually further out in the future?
The inciting incident for the show is in, I believe, 2043. So that's where there is the massive nuclear holocaust. Then everybody goes up to space, and they're in space for 97 years, and the people on the ground have been on the ground for 97 years. So Two things to say about it. First, part of what there are three things that, or there are two things that contribute to the acceleration or the kind of accelerated evolution of the language. One is massive societal collapse. So there's just no more. There are no more institutions. There's no more schools. There's no more reading. Really, people are just kind of surviving. The second thing. So there are three things. The second thing is people are dying off a lot earlier. So there aren't really people in their 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s to preserve the language. So a lot of the new evolutions that teenagers do every single year, because every new batch of teenagers brings with it its own version of the language, they're not getting ironed out. They're not essentially joining the norm. They're creating the new norm every time. And the third thing is that there was an initial group that was really successful that started a code. And this code essentially became a part of the new language, where they intentionally changed the meanings of words so that they would know who was a part of the in-group and who was out of it. But then the last thing I would say is that the language itself, Tregetta slang, is actually really not very different from English, like, at all. It's probably the easiest language for a modern English speaker to learn on the planet, because it is so close to modern English. It's not that different. So, yeah, good question, though.
We have time for probably one more. Yeah. So I'm just going to ask one for my wife, because she won't ask you. She wants a Dothraki name, which personally I'm a little nervous about, but is there a way to give her a Dothraki name?
Oh, well, I need to know something about her character. Mike, what do you like? The art? Yeah, this is now an interview of you. Tell us a little about yourself. Just visual art? Abstract or just still lifes with fruit? What?
Like any type of art.
Okay, so mainly still lifes. Atihi. Atihi. Wait. Let me make sure that I've got Vitiheri. Vitiheri. That's what I think your name should be. Vitiheri. Yeah.
Vitiheri.
Vitiheri.
Sounds like you're like trill. A Russian saying you're really hairy.
Gotta get the trill in there. Vitiheri. Okay. But what it means is it's kind of like it's a feminine name form that's attached to the verb for to watch or to appreciate. So that's you. That's you now. Vitiheri. And you have to trill it. I want to hear you trill it.
Yes.
Yes.
You are Vitiheri. That's what I'm talking about.
Awesome. Cool. Well, thank you guys so much for coming out. Austin, you guys can find on Twitter and on Instagram at I'm Austin Grant. So you can find me on Twitter at Tim Drake, as well as on Instagram at TimDrake42. So, and yeah, thank you guys for coming.
Thank you.
Queremos.